Heichel Menachem presents A Tale of Two Souls, an ongoing lecture series on the Tanya by Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Jacobson. This is tape number 58 in the series entitled The Hasidic Theory of Relativity, recorded live at Heichel Menachem, Brooklyn, New York, on the 7th of Shvat, 5759.
Morning, Perek Chaf Aleph, the 21st chapter of the Tanya. In chapter 20, the Alter Rebbe began explaining Inyinu Mohus Achdusi Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the nature and the essence of Hashem's unity post-creation, similar to His unity prior to the creation of the universe, by exploring the nature of the relationship between the universe and Hashem Himself. The entire universe and all of the worlds, the supernal as well as the lowly worlds, their sole existence, energy, vitality, identity, design, and character is nothing but the Dvar Hashem, the Word of Hashem, the utterance of the Almighty, the energy of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that continuously sustains it, grants it existence, vitality, energy, life. So the whole world has no existence independent of the Dvar Hashem, as we have discussed in earlier weeks at length. Now the Alter Rebbe said, let's examine the relationship between Hashem's word or words which create and continuously sustain the world and all the worlds and Hashem Himself. And He does that by way of analogy and illustration to the human condition. What is the relationship between one word or even one sentence, or even a paragraph uttered by the human being in comparison to his overall communicative power, to his overall power of speech, to the overall articulate ability of the soul? Those words are a product, are a symptom, are a consequence of man's ability to communicate. But when you compare one word uttered by man to his overall ability of communication, to his general collective koyach hadibur, power of speech, to the nefesh hamedaberes, to the speaking communicative power of the soul, a soul has the ability to communicate, and you compare this one word to that infinite ability, the word exists, but it's utterly insignificant. Even when you compare it to its own immediate source, which is man's communicative powers. Power. How much more so if you compare the word to his overall inner communicative power, the power of thought. Not only when you compare it to his communicative power to communicate outside of himself, the power of speech, when you compare that word to his overall communicative power within, which is the power of thought, our ability to communicate and process information to ourselves, here, even more so, we understand how this word is insignificant. It's kiloi chashiv. It's as if non-existent. Needless to say, the Alter Rebbe says, if you compare the one word not to the communicative dimension of dibur, or even to the communicative dimension of machshava, of thought, but to man's intimate self, to man's intimate wellspring of emotions, passions, moods, convictions, feelings, and so on and so forth, here, obviously, the word is utterly insignificant. His intimacy transcends expression. That's the mashal. What's the nimshal? The nimshal is the same as true concerning Hashem. There's a huge world, there's an awesome world, there's an extraordinary world, but it's Hashem's word. It's Hashem's sentence. Bidvar Hashem Shemayim Nasu. The whole world is basically Hashem uttering a word. The world is the word. It's Hashem's speech. And it's a very short speech. There are speeches that extend for 2 hours. There are speeches that extend for an hour. And then there are speeches that are moments, a word. It's a very short speech. It's a brief speech. It's not even a long extended speech of Hashem. It's not a 6 hour shiur. It's Bidvar Hashem. Ba'asarim amaris nivra ha'ilam. 10 utterances, 10 sentences, very short sentences. It's constantly happening, but the sentences are short. So it's mamish one word. Alter Rebbe says dibur echad. Compare that one word not with anything else, but with his overall power of communication, external communication, dibur, which in the nimshal would be Hashem's creative power, Hashem's speaking ability. You cannot judge the oratory skills of the Creator by the speech that He gives. That speech does not define even His communicative power, does not project even His communicative power. How much more so when we compare it to Hashem's inner communicative dimension, His thought process, so to speak. This word is utterly insignificant. And how much more so, needless to say, when we compare it to His intimate self, so to speak, this word plays no role in that realm. In the intimate self, although He acknowledges that He spoke that word, and the word comes from Him, and is a symptom that has evolved from His inner identity, nevertheless, communication versus the intimate self is utterly insignificant. It's kalei chashiv. So when we begin viewing reality, not as outsiders, but as insiders, so to speak, from the Creator's perspective, the world is awesome, the world is amazing, its magnitude is indescribable, incomprehensible to the human mind, but from Hashem's perspective, it's a dibur echad. And when we sketch the relationship between that dibur echad and the ocean of infinity that characterizes even Hashem as a speaker, certainly Hashem as a thinker, and needless to say, Hashem as a being, it transcends infinitely the communication expressed through that one word. And that one word can be deemed as kelei chashiv, as if it would be non-existent. And that is the reason why we can truly say that Hashem is Yachid Meyuchad post-creation, just as He was prior to creation. He's one alone after creation of the universe, just as He was alone before creation of the universe. Because first of all, we established that there is no independent, there is no existence independent of the Dvar Hashem. So the only reality existing, the only being existing, is Hashem's energy creating the universe. The identity of the world is nothing but the divine identity granting it identity every moment. But the Alter Rebbe here adds another point. Even that Dvar Hashem, even that divine energy, which is involved in creating the universe, granting it design, character, vitality, granting it identity and all that, giving it life and existence and so forth. Even that very Dvar Hashem, relative, and when compared to His very self, is Kaloi Chashiv. Is utterly as if non-existent. It's utterly insignificant. It has no value. It's valueless and insignificant. So therefore, we can truly say that Hashem's aloneness has not been compromised in any form or fashion by the creation of the universe. Let's learn inside. Perek Chaf Aleph. V'hine midas HaKadosh Baruch Hu shaloi kemidas basav adam. Now the nature of the divine order is not like that of the human being who is a creature of flesh and blood. So therefore human terms cannot adequately describe divine qualities. And the same is true as in our case. Sha'a Adam, the human being, k'shemedaber dibur, when he says something, when he utters a word, harei hevel ha-dibur shebefiv, the breath of the spoken word coming from his mouth, whom murgish may be sensed, v'nire dover b'fnei atzmai, and is perceived as an independent entity, muvdol misharshay, separated from its source, shehein eser b'chinois hanafesh atzma, namely the 10 faculties of the soul itself. The source of the words uttered by man usually, the source is his 10 faculties, is his personality, characteristics, attributes, whether intellectual ones or emotional ones or functional ones. That is ultimately the source, the origin, the fountainhead, which produces man's communication, either through thought and then finally through speech, where he communicates himself to others. So the breath of the spoken word is sensed and it's perceived as a separate reality which originates in the 10 faculties but ultimately gets separated from these faculties. So when the spoken word exists in its source, it can be deemed as utterly insignificant. But when the spoken word leaves its source, it takes on a life, an identity, and a character of its own. But this is true only in regard to human speech. Aval HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but concerning Hashem, ein diburei muvdol mimenu yizbarach chas v'shalom. The speech of Hashem is not, heaven forbid, separated from His divine self, ki ein davar chutz mimenu, for nothing is outside of Him, v'leis asar ponimine, and no place is devoid of Him. So that His speech is always contained within Him. And this has very powerful and interesting consequences about the nature of reality. By a human being, you can say there is a stage of the game when that one word is utterly insignificant. When? When you compare it to the deeper dimensions of the self, which means when the word is still there. Even when you compare the word to His thought process, to His ability to communicate inside, even when you compare that one word to his general speech power, it's utterly insignificant. But when you utter the word, it takes on a life of itself. And it's not even dependent upon you anymore. Why? Because it gets separated from that intimate, infinite wellsprings where it played no role and it had no identity. And it didn't really have value and significance relative to that dimension. You utter a word, it's emitted from you, and now it has impacts beyond your knowledge. In a powerful way, in a positive way, and sometimes in a negative way. There was the famous story about a Jew who was a master, if you can use that word, of Lashon Hara, of gossiping. And then he came to a certain stage of his life and he realized what he has done, how he has utilized his life, what type of relationships he has created, what it says about himself. And he wanted to do tshuva. So he came to the Rav of the city. The Rav was a wise man, and he begged him, weeping and crying, to direct him and give him a tikkun, a method to mend his soul, a remedy for his wrongdoings for so many years. The Rav said, take a few pillows of feathers, feather pillows. And this city has many homes. Every person that you have ever spoken to Lashon Hara about someone else, go and place a feather at his home. Just one feather. Sounds pretty easy, that's it. The Rav says in the meantime, fine. He goes to the store, he buys a few pillows, and he starts dispersing. He basically spoke to every man in the city, Lashon Hara, so every home got a feather. He finished. Took him a half a day or a day. He comes to the Rav. I did it. Every home has a feather. The Rav says, okay, now go collect the feathers. It was a nice winter, windy day. He goes back. There's not one feather there. The Rav said, that's what happened. That's what you did. This is what you did. The power of the word is not just the human being you told it to. And then you go and you retract it. You put down the feather and then it goes, it travels to distances, to territories beyond your reach. You cannot retract it anymore. And then he directed him and he gave him a derech of tshuva, which was a difficult one. But that was the physical way of demonstrating to him what he has done. So the point being is that the dibur ultimately assumes an autonomous identity, dover b'fnei atzmai. That is by the human being. What about by Hashem? Since leisasar ponimine, which is a very famous quote from Tikkuni Zayin, Tikkunun Zayin, quoted often in the Chassidus of the Alter Rebbe, leisasar ponimine, there's no place devoid of him. So the word never leaves him. The word that he utters never leaves his own inner self, because there's no place that's devoid of his inner self, because Hashem is omnipresent. And ein dover chutz mimena, as Dr. Rebbe says, there's nothing outside of him. V'lachein hence, ein dibura yizbarach kidibureinu chas v'shalom. His speech is not like our speech, God forbid. Dr. Rebbe keeps on emphasizing chas v'shalom. Ein dibura yimuvdil mani yizbarach chas v'shalom, chas v'shalom. Because this is important to understand that we, even when we use anthropomorphisms, using human attributes to describe divine qualities, there has to be understood that those analogies are always imperfect. So his speech is not like our speech. And he adds in parentheses, k'moishen machshavti k'machshavisenu. Just as his thought is not like our thought. And this is stated in the Torah specifically, explicitly. The Torah says, "Kidiksiv," as the pasuk says in Yeshaya Perek Nun Hey, "Ki loy machshavayse machshavaseichem." From my thoughts are not like your thoughts. Uksiv, and it's also written there in that same Perek in the next pasuk, "Kain gavu derachay midarcheichem." And he concludes the pasuk, "Umachshavayse machshavaseichem." So my ways are higher than your ways, and my thoughts higher than your thoughts. Similarly, the Alter Rebbe is saying, Hashem's speech cannot be compared to the human speech, just as Hashem's machshava cannot be compared to the human machshava. But if this is the case, we have to understand, why do we call creation a speech? Call it a thought? Hashem's communicative expression should be deemed a thought. If it never leaves him, it's apparently identical to our thought process. A thought is also a way of communication, but it's a communication which remains confined by our own parameters and walls. Thought never assumes an identity independent of yourself. It never reaches another human being. It never has an impact beyond your own identity and self. It never leaves the portals of man's inner gates. But nevertheless, we call it dibur. So the Alter Rebbe explains, "V'lo nikre dibur yizbarach b'shem dibur." Hashem's speech is not called dibur, only rak, only al derech mashal, in order to illustrate that kemoi she dibur hatachten sheba adam. Just as man's speech, kemoi she dibur hatachten sheba adam. Just as man's speech reveals to his audience what was hidden and concealed in his thoughts, so too, when we're dealing with the infinite one, blessed be he, the emergence of the energy and life force of the Ein Sof, from a state of concealment into a state of revelation, for the purpose of creating and animating the worlds, niknas b'shem dibur. That emergence from a state of concealment into a state of actuality of revelation is called speech. V'hein hein asara ma'amaros shebehen nivra'ilam. This is that comprises the 10 divine utterances by which the world was created. V'chein sha'ar kol ha'toyra neviyim uksuvim, she'isigu ha'neviyim b'mayra nevuasim. Likewise, this comprises all the other words of the Torah, the prophets, and the holy writings, which the prophets perceived in their prophetic vision, which we also refer to as Hashem's speeches, as Hashem's utterances, as Hashem speaking to the Nevi'im. The human speech is not to be compared to divine speech. Obviously, the physical differences, the Alter Rebbe is not even discussing. In other words, all the physiological, biological dimensions that are characterized and are so much connected to our speech, that the Alter Rebbe doesn't even have to emphasize, that the Alter Rebbe doesn't even have to address and state that that doesn't exist when we're dealing with Hashem's speech. What the Alter Rebbe is addressing is something else. The separateness that characterizes human speech. The autonomous quality and identity that characterizes human speech. Here we have to make a distinction. On the other hand, we nevertheless call Hashem's speech as dibur because of another very powerful analogy in which we can equate it in some form or fashion with the human speech, and that is in the quality of gilui. In addition to dibur becoming autonomous, separate, and independent, there is also the dimension that dibur reveals. Dibur has the ability, what dibur is all about is the ability to communicate in a revealed fashion what has been in a state of concealment prior to dibur. This is not the ability of machshava. Machshava communicates our inner self to ourselves. Dibur takes that self and allows us to communicate it to other human beings, to reveal it. In this dimension, we call Hashem creating the universe, Hashem giving a speech. Because by creating the universe, Hashem allows His energy to be embodied, to become concrete, to become manifest. Hashem's Eir and Chayis prior to the creation of the world is in a state of Helam. It's part and parcel, if we can use those terms, of Himself, of His reality, of His identity. Creation of the universe is an act where Hashem's energy, life force, qualities, so to speak, emerge and take on a concrete identity, so to speak. They have an impact on a concrete level. They are realized, they are expressed, they're projected, they're manifested, and the product is the world, the universe. That is an embodiment, a physical embodiment in the physical world, or a spiritual embodiment in the spiritual universe. It's an embodiment, it's a gilui of His inner energy and inner quality. And therefore we call it dibur. These are the 10 utterances. And the same Alter Rebbe says is true about Torah. Torah is also called Hashem's dibur. It's not about creation of a universe. The Torah is not a universe. But it's the same idea. The Torah and Nevi'im and Ksuvim, we say, Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe. Hashem spoke to Moshe. Or Hashem spoke to the Nevi'im. whether in Chumash and Chamisha Chumash Torah and the Nevi'im and Ksuvim and all the 24 Svarim of the Tanakh. What is the idea of Dibur? Not to be compared to the human Dibur where something leaves him. Because less asar panime, panimine, there's no place devoid of him. The comparison is in the fact that Hashem allows himself to be revealed. He communicates something of himself to the Nevi'im, to the prophets which perceived, which comprehended, and transcribed it ultimately in the Svarim of the Tanakh. That's why we call it Dibur. Vaharei, thus, Dibur o yomachshav toikivayachl, Hashem's speech and thought, miyuchado yisi may betachlis hayichud, are united with Him in absolute union, derech mashal, by way of illustration, kimay dibura yomachshavte shel adam, ba'aydan b'kayach chachmasi v'sichlai. Just like the speech and thought of man, before he actually expresses them in speech as speech and thought, rather as they are while still in his faculty of wisdom and intellect, ay b'tshuka v'chemdesh b'liboy, or as they exist in a desire or craving that are still in his heart. Before they rise from the heart to the brain, they're to be meditated upon with the letters of thought. She'oz, at that point, before one speaks or thinks, hayu oisius hamachshava v'hadibur hazeh, the letters of his speech and thought, hanimshach ois michemdo tshukazu, which evolve from the aforementioned longing and desire. Bekayach beleth, at that point before one speaks, these letters of thought and speech were still in a potential state in the heart. Umiyuchadesham betachlis hayichud besharsham, where they were absolutely unified with their source. Shehein, what is their source? Hachachme v'seichel shebemayach, the wisdom and intellect in the brain, v'chemdo tshuka shebelev, and the longing and desire in the heart. But by the human being, this state has ceased to exist once he has thought or uttered the word. But v'kach ha-mamesh derech mashal, precisely so by way of analogy, miyuchad ois dibura yomachshav teshal HaKadosh Baruch Hu, v'tachlis ha-yichud, Hashem's speech and thought are absolutely united with His essence and being. Gam achar sheyatzo dibur yizbarach ala poyel bebriyos ha'olamos, even after His speech has already become materialized in the creation of the world, k'may shahaya meyuchadim meikayd in bebriyos ha'olamos, just as it was united with Him before the worlds were created. By the human being, the Alter Rebbe is saying, there is a powerful distinction between these words or thoughts when they were still included in His intimate self and when they were later expressed and materialized. At stage A, they were part of His identity, and they had no separate significance, no separate character or form. At stage B, they assume, as mentioned earlier, an autonomous identity. And as he discussed in chapter 20, the process of it. In man's intimate feelings and emotions, there are no words, there are no letters. You don't love in words, or through words. You communicate that love through words to yourself, by thinking and meditating upon the love, or to others by uttering words that are expressive of that love. But the love itself is never experienced via words. People don't love in different languages. Yes. Expression needs words. Expression needs letters. But the inner experience of a longing and a desire, you might talk and you might not understand English. You might understand only French, and I might understand only English. That creates a hindrance for communication. It doesn't create a hindrance for love. A person who speaks French doesn't understand love differently than a human being who speaks English. You don't love in a language. You think in a language, you talk in a language. You don't even understand in a language, the Alter Rebbe says. You think in a language, you don't understand in a language. The understanding is identical. Those are the essential faculties of the soul which transcend Isis. Isis are about communication. That's where language emerges, when there's a need for communication. In the very experience, there is no language because that transcends communication. So the Alter Rebbe says at that stage, when the human being was experiencing the longing, the desire, or the very understanding, the words and the Isis were there potentially. Because ultimately they will emerge. This emotion will express itself through these words. But at that stage they are totally unified with man's intimate essence. Totally one with his essence. His thought and even his speech and even his thought. But then, when the human being gets into the mode of communication, and usually, let's not forget that these things happen very swiftly. There's almost never a moment in our life when we can actually, in a tangible way, differentiate between when we are in a mode of, which is beyond communication, and we're in the mode of communication. Because we work so swiftly, and we are not really attuned to the inner energies of our soul on a constant basis, that it's like similar to Chachma and Bina, conception and comprehension. Very, very seldom does man get a taste of the process. The process is happening very swiftly. Sometimes when a person wakes up from anesthesia, and the mind is working in a slower fashion, the various processes of thought and brain can be recognizable in a more tangible and concrete fashion, because the process has been slowed down. So Isis are not an essential component of man's understanding or feelings. They are come in just to communicate their understanding of the feeling. That's the Alter Rebbe's doctrine. They transcend communication. But when communication happens, they ultimately assume an identity of their own. Even in thought, the Isis assume an identity, and certainly in thought, in speech. By Hashem, he's saying, what is true by a human being prior to his communicative mode, when the letters and the thoughts were still totally unified and absolutely nullified within his essential faculties, by Hashem that's true even after his speech has already become materialized in the creation of the worlds, just as that speech was united with him before the world was created, when it existed potentially within him, since Leis Hasar Panimine, his very self is present in the space of the speech as well, so to speak. So therefore, the words and what these words produce continue to have the same significance and the same reality as they had when the words were still part and parcel of his intimate identity. Ve'ein shum shinui klal lefon av yizbarech. Thus, for Hashem, nothing whatever was changed. There was no shinui happened. By the revelation of his creative power in creation, nothing has changed. Because the gilui of the dibur does not mean that now a new reality emerged which has new type of identity, new significance. Hashem never left that space. So the gili of it has not affected him and has not created any type of change. Ella, the change wrought by creation is El Haberuyim Hamakablim Chayusam. Mibchines Diburiyas Barak, Mibchines Yitziyase Kvarala Poyal Babriyas Oilamus. The change wrought by creation exists only with regard to the created beings who receive their life force from Hashem's word when it proceeds from concealment to actualization with the creation of the worlds. Shemisla beish behem lachayosam. At which time it clothes itself in these worlds to give them life. Al yedei, how does this happen? Al yedei, shtal shalus. me'ila la'olu. This process takes place through a gradual descent from level to level. The higher level is referred to as an ilo, which means a cause, and the lower level, the olu, which means the effect. So this energy, this speech, so to speak, this creative energy which is being projected, descends from one level to another level, from an ila to an alul, from cause to effect, to another cause, to another effect, to another cause, and so forth. V'yiridas hamadregis, and a downward gradation of levels. B'tzimtzum mimrabim v'shoinim, by means of numerous and various contractions and concealments. In other words, this energy, this creative energy of Hashem, His dibur, His projective energy, descends through various levels, and it descends through various tzimtzumim, through various restrictions, constrictions, concealments, contractions. Ad sheyuchlu habruyim lekabel chayusam v'yisavusim imanu, to the point where the created beings can derive their life force and existence from it, v'lo yizbatlu b'metzius, without losing their identity. V'chol hatzimtzumim, all the contractions, hem p'chinas hester ponim, constitute a veiling of the divine countenance, that they veil and conceal the light and the life force that are derived from Hashem's word, so that it should not reveal itself with intense radiance, which the lower worlds would be incapable of receiving. Therefore, as a result of this, the dibur being obscured through the various tzimtzumim, nid malahem er v'chayis hadibur shel makim baruch hu amalu b'shem, the light and the life force of Hashem's word that is enclosed in them appears to them ki'ilu hu davar muvdom m'muhusiv atzmus yizbarach, as if it is something separate from Hashem Himself. It appears to them as though it only issues from him, just as a speech of a human being issues from him, but then becomes separated from him. That's how it's perceived by creation. Creation perceives the speech as something which comes from him, but ultimately becomes separate from him. Hence, the created beings do not perceive themselves as totally insignificant, losing any aspect of identity whatsoever. Because if they would be in touch with that perception, how it is from Hashem's perspective, how it is from the intimate, how it is from Hashem's intimate self perspective, they would totally be batel b'metzius. They would lose any type of identity because the dibur has no identity. The dibur plays no role. So this creative energy has to go through a descent of many gradations, lowering its energy, its power, its identity, and going through many tzimtzumim. It's constricted, and then it becomes Hashem's speech which creates the world. And then it becomes Hashem's speech. It's not the direct inner dibur becomes the speech that creates the world. Till that speech is emitted, so to speak. The word emitted is obviously improper based on what we learned here. But till that speech is materialized, it goes through a very many gradations. Until, which these gradations achieve that it should be concealed, it should be veiled, to the extent that it can be perceived as something separate from him. His intimate self is not in that space in a revealed way to the creatures. Because if that would be the case, they could not experience themselves as an identity, because the dibur, which is creating them, is not an identity. Doesn't have an identity, because less asar panimine. There's no space that's devoid of him. So the intimate self, which nullifies the dibur, which nullifies the communicative element, is there in that very space. Ah, 1 second. So therefore, the creatures, at best, even if they perceive the speech, they perceive the speech as autonomous of the speaker. Which means, even if we acknowledge that there is a God, well, so see, that itself is part of the Tzimtzum problem. But even if we can acknowledge this concept of Yesh Me'ayin, the concept that the world has a creator, and not just the creator, but as Alter Rebbe explained, has no existence independent of the creator, has no existence independent of the speech. Just like in our metaphor of previous weeks, a daydream, the realities that populate the space that's created in our daydream have obviously no reality or existence independent of the daydream. Even if we can acknowledge that, we still acknowledge the speech as creating us, as our existence having no independence about that speech, but as something autonomous of the speaker, as something being issued from the speaker, being emitted from the speaker, being produced from the speaker. And therefore the Nivrayim, the creatures, can have some identity. An identity called an egotistical identity, that's Pashut, an illusion. That the person didn't even begin to appreciate what he can appreciate from as an outsider. But the identity, furthermore, even our identity as expressions of Hashem's Dibur, if we would perceive what is really going on, how that Dibur is totally part of Himself, there would be no Metzius to reality. There would be no identity to reality. So these Tzimtzumim create for us that perception of significance and identity. Now, between us, we know that the Tzimtzumim create something even more worse. We don't even perceive that there's a speech going on. We don't even perceive ourselves as products of a speech. We perceive ourselves as totally independent realities, as egotistical creatures. That's stage two. But now the Alter Rebbe is talking on a much more refined level. The first thing that Tzimtzumim create is allowing the perception of the Dibur separate from the speaker. But what about Hashem? This is the audience. What about Hashem? Ach l'gabei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But in regard to Hashem, ain't shum tzimtzum vehester vehelim, master of mylam lefonov, no concealment or veil hides or obscures anything from him. Vekach hasheicha ka'ira, as the pasuk puts it in Tehillim, perikof lamites, darkness and light are alike. Kedixiv, as the pasuk says, in the same place in Tehillim, Gam chayshech layachshik memecha, even the darkness does not obscure anything from you. And the reason for that is mishum she'ein hatzimtzumim v'halavushim davar nifrid b'menu yizbarachas v'shalom. For the tzimtzumim, the contractions and the veils are not things distinct from him, heaven forbid. Ela kahadein kamtze de levushe mineu vei, but are like the turtle whose garment is part of its body. The Medrash gives a metaphor that the turtle, some people translate Kamtz as a turtle, some people as a snail, its garment, its shell is part of its body. So the shell, the process of Tzimtzum that hides godliness, is itself godly. The levush is mineu bei, and therefore it could only conceal for an outsider, but for the wearer of the garment, it doesn't create any type of concealment. K'may shekasov, as the pasuk says in Parshas Vaschanan, ki Hashem hu ha'elikim, Hashem is elikim. Or k'may shekasov, Makamachin has explained elsewhere. The Kabbalah and Chassidus explains that Hashem, the tetragrammaton constituting the four letters Yud Ke Vav Ke, express the transcendental element of Hashem. Hence the four letters Yud Ke Vav Ke, which combine in one word, the three words, Haya Haive V'yeh, He was, He is, and He will be, meaning that that is the element of Hashem which integrates past, present, and future because it transcends space and time. Elohim has the numerology of the word Hateva, nature. Aleph Lamed Heyud Mem is 86, the same as the word Hateva, the nature, because that is not the transcendental element of Hashem, but is the element of godliness that manifests itself in creation. Hence Elohim is also plural. And Elohim is identified with Din, with judgment, with restriction, with concealment. Versus Hashem, which is identified with Gilui, with revelation, with projection. So, Hashem is Elikim. You're not dealing, God forbid, with two deities, Chas v'Shalom. The same Hashem, that is the very same Elikim. Because the Levushim, the garments, the constrictions, the manifested element is coming from Him, it's all part of Him. When a teacher, when a communicator is trying to convey a concept, and he understands the concept very, very clearly, in a crystal fashion, but the audience, his pupils, his disciples, his students, are not comprehending the concept, he sometimes employs a metaphor. And sometimes if you're dealing with young children, the metaphor might be very anecdotal, extremely simple, very visual usually, because we want that the children and the students should be able to grasp it easily, and then from the metaphor they can ascend and understand the concept per se. When he is saying the metaphor, they have not understood the concept. For them, the story is a concealment. If the story would have the same intensity of the concept itself, it wouldn't work as a good parable and a metaphor. It's a veil in a sense. It obscures it, which means it's possible not to identify in the metaphor the concept. It has to be pointed out. For the teacher, as he's saying the story and the metaphor, the concept is there in its full intensity. There's no difference. Because the student is an outsider who doesn't know the concept, and therefore by him the metaphor is something new that has been superimposed. So the tzimtzumim in the dibur, which allow us to perceive the dibur as something separate, don't exist relative to Hashem, because those tzimtzumim don't veil Him. They don't constitute a concealment. So therefore, the Alter Rebbe concludes, and these are his final concluding words, V'lachein, therefore, kamei kula kalei chashev mamash. In His presence, all else is of absolutely no account or significance. Which are the words with which he began Perek Chaf, when he said that the true nature of Hashem's unity is to be understood in terms of Hashem being totally one and unified post-creation, just as He was prior creation. Hu levadehu, He is one alone then, now, just as He was then. And now the Alter Rebbe concludes the point. It's everything is mamash kalei chashev. It has not compromised His aloneness even a bit. The fact that the world has no independent quality or existence out of the Dvar Hashem has been already established in the prefacing words of Perek. But now the Alter Rebbe goes even further. Since the Dibur has never left Him, there is no space. Space, I don't only mean physically, I also mean conceptually, where the world has a chshivus. Where the world plays now a significant role. Because the dibur has never left Him. The tzimtzumim that allow us to perceive ourselves as something separate do not conceal Him from His perspective. So from His perspective, His intimate self is present in the same space of the dibur. And therefore that utterance has the same value and significance now when it created the world as it had before, when it was totally unified in His essence. Like it has a significance in the human being when it's unified in His essence. So therefore in His presence, regarding Hashem's reality, kula kamei kalei chashev. Yeah. Now, let's talk about the message, the soul, the neshama of this chapter. It's a difficult chapter. It's very complicated. And let's attempt to understand it to the best of our ability. And during our discussion now, I want to address the various questions that were presented, particularly at the end of last week's class, where many of you had many questions. And I want to discuss all of these issues thoroughly. The Alter Rebbe declared in chapter 20 of Tanya that the entire world is a speech of Hashem. How do we say it in davening every morning? Baruch Sha'amar V'haya Ha'olam, blessed is he who spoke and the world came into being. The world is an ongoing speech. More meticulously, the world is not a speech of Hashem, it's a word of Hashem. It's a single word of Hashem, as we discussed last week. And one of the reasons, the Alter Rebbe explained, the Torah employs the metaphor of speech to define the act of creation, is because the amount of energy that one expends and invests in uttering one word relative to one's capacity of speech is minuscule. It's totally insignificant. In the presence of the infinite capacity of the soul to speak, the energy that is expended to utter but one word is inconsequential. It's virtually non-existent. Certainly, when you view that one word in the presence of thought, of the thoughts that produce the word, that one word adds nothing. It doesn't occupy any data. It's as though it doesn't exist. Certainly, the Alter Rebbe continued in chapter 20, needless to say, if you view that word in the presence of the original emotion that produced the thought that in turn produced the words, it's obvious that the letters and the words that define and express the feeling in the presence of the emotion itself don't add anything on the experience of the emotion. Once the word leaves the human being, once the word leaves me, leaves my emotions, leaves my thoughts, it's significant. It's very significant. On the contrary, for the person outside of me, that's the only way through which he gets to know me, through my words. I communicate to him my thoughts, I communicate to him my feelings, I communicate to him my ideas. Without these words, he would know nothing about me.